Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net. This week in Outcast World, we're taking you to one of the queerest breakfast tables in Britain, the Boys, Boys, Boys Breakfast Club. It's coffees, croissants and big queer conversations with some of the most iconic names in LGBTQ plus art, media and culture. And yes, we were fully caffeinated, deeply opinionated and surrounded by greatness. One of the legends on this week's episode, alongside Gayla Pascal, who runs Boys, Boys, Boys and has been a guest on Outcast in the past, and Sean Waters, the New York-based queer photographer, was Cliff Jonu, the editor-in-chief of Attitude magazine, one of the world's biggest LGBTQ plus news sources. Cliff is a long-time champion of queer voices. From the front lines of politics to the pages of the UK's best-selling gay magazine, he's shaped queer media through some of its most radical shifts, and he's still pushing the culture forward with every cover story. An activist at heart. In this episode, you'll hear my chat with Cliff from the Boys, Boys, Boys podcast. That's our sister show, hosted and produced by me and the same team that brings you Outcast World, where I get deep into queer art and culture with guests like photographers, curators and trailblazing creatives. So here's a taste. This is me and Cliff Jonu talking queer media, coming out stories and what it means to grow up gay and stay loud. The Boys, Boys, Boys podcast is where we discover art, queer, culture.
Good morning.
Is that your morning voice there?
Do I have to explain who Gandalf? Do I have to explain who Shakespeare is?
We dive into conversations with legendary queer artists and the creatives working with the biggest stars in the world.
The next day I was like, babe, we need to pull this bit together. And so up went the beehive, which was, I think, the first time she did it.
Smart, bold and beautifully queer. Listen to the Boys, Boys, Boys podcast wherever you get yours.
Obviously, you're the editor-in-chief of Attitude, one of the world's biggest LGBTQ plus media brands. Also, the editor of Rolling Stone UK as well. You've got a long history in LGBTQ plus media. Before you edited Attitude, you were at QX magazine, weren't you? What is the current state of queer media, do you think? And how is Attitude doing at the moment in the current state of the market?
I don't think we're any different on the surface to the other challenges media face, whether that is the whims of the economy, which seems to be a lot more volatile these days, certainly the last 10 years than historically. We kind of were in a very comfortable period of so many years where sort of, you know, things just went along well for a very long time. And then you had bumps like Brexit, COVID, a certain Liz Truss's economic crash. So it just feels like we've been blown from one end to the other. So we're a tiny team, despite being an enormous global brand, but we can be flexible and adapt to the changing times. Certainly the biggest challenge we've faced probably in the last 8 months or so is a certain Orange, what's it on the other side of the pond, who has decided to blame all the world's failures on DEI. And has complete no understanding of what the intention of DEI is and what it's the benefit it has to businesses and exactly just what it means to be mindful of diversity, equality and inclusion. Endless examples of which I can give you. But it just comes down to whether you're, it just depends whether you're a bigot or not.
Yeah.
Essentially, because all DEI is what the world looks like when you leave your front door and look outside. And that's what inclusion is representing all the wonderful varied people you see in the world. So as a business, especially for Attitude, which focuses on minorities and, well, I don't like the word minorities, it focuses on what's not the norm. You know, the threat to DEI has been something we've been very mindful of. But weirdly, we've actually had probably one of our best years yet. Because the businesses that have been very supportive of DEI, the businesses that are very faithful to inclusions such as Virgin Atlantic, such as British Airways, Peugeot. I can give you a whole list of them, even Amex. They've all continued their work with us because they want to speak to an audience that's engaged and open-minded. So it's, you know, interesting times.
Do you think the recent situation with Trump has made them more likely to want to put their money into the kind of like inclusive media brand that Attitude is?
Yeah, I think there was an apprehension at the end of last year because nobody really knew which way the wind would blow. So when Trump came in, there was a big fear, and all of these big brands who are, you know, I won't name, could just Google them, they all stepped away and just suddenly started dropping all these DEI initiatives. It was easy to do in the States because they don't have so many quality laws as we do in the UK. And then Trump came in on the 20th of January and enacted all these horrendous laws, and all those people that had initially stood by him suddenly realized, oh, this person is quite crazy. I think what's happened is you'll find organizations slowly stepping away from his rhetoric. And, you know, I speak to a lot of people in business, and it's kind of a redressing and rebranding of what it means to celebrate DEI, whether it's just calling it inclusion, whether it's kind of building it into the framework of a business in a different way so that it's not as daunting to, you know, to more narrow-minded people who think that DEI is all about, you know, putting inexperienced people from different backgrounds up in the air to fly planes and all sorts of ridiculous things that they come up with.
It needs to slip under the radar for the time being, doesn't it? I think DEI, in order to not have a big target on its back.
For some companies, others are quite proudly supportive of, you know, not just LGBTQ+, but also of other minorities, you know, other, you know, people of color, supporting women in the workplace. You know, again, I cite someone like Virgin Atlantic, who are just probably the best example of inclusion that I in the world. Print is part of the ecosphere of what we do. It's an important part. It's the crown jewel of what we do. There is no other printed gay magazine in the UK at the moment. We are the only print magazine that comes in a print format. And we're probably the most prominent in Europe. Certainly in the world, I think people around the world are familiar with Attitude. We don't sell as many copies of the Out magazine, for example, because Out is, you know, sold across America, and the sheer numbers there create volume. But we are globally renowned. In terms of the print magazine, it's the cherry on the cake of what we offer. You know, we're a 360 multi-platform brand, you know, and all those different social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, or X, our website, our events. Like, we have 3 tempo moments a year of these, you know, hugely impressive events, the Pride Awards, the Attitude 101, which celebrates business trailblazers, and our key Attitude Awards event in October. They are all part of our kind of brand and what we create. But the print magazine at the core has a very loyal readership. You know, we've got subscribers who have been following since 1994 when it launched, and then subscribers who joined maybe 5-6 years ago. So whilst, yeah, certainly print is not selling in quantities that it was 5, 10, 15 years ago, because nobody is, it's still functioning as, you know, as sort of like the digest or the curation of the best content that we create. Often original content that goes in print, then goes on Apple News, or then goes online. But yeah, as a product, it's not the primary part of our business structure, or, you know, the structure of what Attitude is as it was maybe 10 years ago, but it's certainly seen it, our little, the cherry on the cake, the crown jewel in our little crown. A few years ago, we went from being 13 issues a year, and it was a thin, you know, the paper was thinner, it was published every 4 weeks. It was more, you know, it was a traditional magazine in that sense. And then what we did is reduced the frequency to 6 issues a year and made it bigger and better paper quality. It's a thicker magazine now. It's more coffee table format. So what we create with Attitude now is more of, it's the kind of magazine you put out and you leave it out on your coffee table now. It's changed and evolved and grown as our audience and as the industry has changed. You know, is an age range of about 35 to 45. And then it's sort of like this perfect triangle, where it sort of peters off down in from 25 to 35 and 18 plus and then 45 plus on the other side of that triangle. So it's like a lovely little pyramid of readership. So it's harder to engage, to get people to buy print magazines. We're not as readily available as we were before. We're in major train stations, but our biggest audience is actually in airports. Like, it seems to be the go-to magazine when people go on holiday, which we're happy with. You know, if people want to take us out on holiday. I think there's been a change in the last 3 or 4 years as well. Like, certainly, like, I go out clubbing a lot. I love the party scene, even at my grand old age. And 10 years ago, you kind of turned your nose up at a club that had a dark room, for example. And now every other club in East London has a playroom. And it's just so commonplace. I think we've kind of re-engaged with our sexuality in a way that perhaps hasn't happened. Maybe 5, 6 years. Maybe it's the prevalence of PrEP. Maybe it's social media. Maybe it's a combination of everything. But I think we are engaged in our sexuality in a way that we weren't 10 years ago. And it's lovely to see that coming back around. Like, you know, that's the sex in sexuality is having a moment again. You know, I remember during COVID, there was all the stories because obviously a lot of gay men were living on their own and cruising suddenly like became a thing again. People were going to the parks and meeting each other after dark. And I heard all these stories of parks, you know, local to us, which I thought were just dated, like, you know, things from back in the day when I was a kid doing it in the closet, and people were out cruising again. So there just seems to be this resurgence of queer culture, which is probably where Boys, Boys, Boys has taken off as well, because there's a re-engagement in putting the sex back into sexuality. Like, you know, obviously there's the issues around representation and diversity, which, you know, you have to be mindful of. But I think there's also that what I'm hearing is just, it's interesting for me to see how we're enjoying our bodies more.
People are definitely more sex positive than they were. I think as LGBTQ plus youth, we were surrounded by lots of things that people would be kind of like, make you feel ashamed if you were overtly sexual. And now I don't see that in younger
people.
It's
an appreciation of the male form.
Yeah.
Like, we are getting back to a place where that is allowed again. And we're allowed to engage with that. And I think that's where these calls for representation come in. Because I remember 15 years ago, everybody was, you know, waxed to back, front, inside, outside. Like, you know, there wasn't a hair on a man's body. And now it's okay to have a hairy back. It's okay to not necessarily have a six pack. People are kind of engaged in different ways of how a human looks, which is where the calls for representation, I think, come from.
Something that gets, it's fodder on LGBTQ plus podcasts. It's something we would have done more in the past, but it's always quite charming, I think. I'd love to hear a coming out story. That's what we're going to do this week.
I never know how to answer this question because I don't know what scenario you're putting me in. Like, what's my coming out story
as a youth?
The first person or to myself?
I think to the first, oh, both actually, to you and then to the first person.
Well, I think like a lot of majority of gay queer men, it was always there. Like, I fancied my maths teacher. I always wanted him to like take me for a spin in his sports car. I don't know why. I fancied my PE teacher. I fancied my friends. But I wasn't overtly sexual. I think I've repressed that so deeply. I grew up in South London, in Croydon in the 90s, in the shadow of AIDS, in a very Greek Orthodox religious heavy family. So I think any sexual urge was repressed until I had my first sexual experience. And then suddenly realized, wow, what is that shit? which was a blowjob in a steam room, in a gym in New York in 1995. Back then, unless you got your hands on porn, which was almost impossible at the age of 17, unless you went into Soho, like, you don't, no one tells you what a blowjob is until you have one. And then that kind of just opened the doors to all sorts of misadventures. But I couldn't tell you the first person I told I was gay. I think it must have been, certainly a family member, but would have been my sister. I remember waking her up. I'd come back from a nightclub. I was probably at Heaven or Trade or something. Some late night club. And I came back high and I woke her up in her bed at like 4 o'clock in the morning because I remember the sun was coming up and I took her outside. It was cold. She was in her dressing gown. And she pulled a cigarette out and I dropped this big revelation that I was gay. And she was like, I know. Okay, should we go inside? It's like a lot warmer in there.
Who would you say Attitude is aimed at nowadays? Is it still sort of aimed at cis gay men? And how are you planning to kind of reduce, I guess you want to kind of reduce the average age of that audience because it's what you said, 35 to 45. What are you doing to kind of address that?
Yeah, I think, so our primary audience, when we've looked at the data across all our different social media platforms and from what we can gather on Google Analytics, it varies between 67 and 77% of our readership are gay, bi, queer, trans identifying men. You know, we would have said gay back in the day. Sometimes it's easier to say that, but it's male identifying queer men. Then we have a high percentage of female readers and obviously a percentage of trans and non-binary and other queer identifying readers. So where our events, so the Attitude Awards, the Pride Awards, our 101 event, they speak to the wider community. So it's the core of what we do when it comes to editorially. You're servicing that 67, 77% of the readership, but also we're deeply trans supportive. Like that's ingrained in our bones. We are carrying trans stories. We published a story just yesterday about trans representation on screen, interviewing three stars of three new TV shows. We're as much about the community as we are about celebrating gay, bi, queer men, because it's important to actually uphold each other. But yeah, it's in terms of speaking to a younger audience, it's where our TikTok is, it's where our Instagram is. That's you kind of mold and shape the brand and the magazine to the platform that you're speaking on. But the tone of voice is always the same. I'd like to think that wherever you access Attitude, you're feeling like you're speaking to the same, you're hearing the same person, you're hearing Attitude, and it might be a different platform and it might look slightly differently, but the tone of voice, what we believe, what we stand for is the same. Yeah. It's always increasingly hard to gain new audiences, but it never fails to surprise me how, you know, when I'm out at an event or even out socially and I meet someone who's 22, 23, they know Attitude. They might not buy the print magazine, but they know Attitude, and that is valuable. You know, not everybody will be buying the print magazine, but as long as they're engaging and understand what the brand means and what we stand for, then that's the most valuable thing we can do.
Do you think it's important for gay, bi, queer men, that kind of demographic and audience for the inclusive approach that you're going for? So you're still aimed, your core audience is still kind of like, gay, bi, queer men, 35 plus. But you have an inclusive approach because do you think that's what that audience demands now? And if that's the case, when did that change kind of seem to happen?
We've lost readers.
Yeah.
By our inclusive approach, but we just say goodbye to them. You know, we've had people write to us and say we shouldn't be so overly trans focused. And we kindly explain to them why we're doing that, because, you know, we have to defend our community. We have to defend everyone in the community. Not just because it's the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do. You know, we're all here together, but you know, if you're not defending those other parts of the community, when they're eventually, you know, pushed aside, they'll come for us next. So, you know, the freedom of one is the freedom of all. And we send a kindly worded email back to those people and we just tell them, we encourage them that, you know, we still speak to our gay, bi, queer, male audience. But it's important for us to support the broader community. Like that's what I personally believe in. And it's what we believe in as a brand. And then recently we had another email back from the same person who didn't like the direction of the conversation. And we replied to them again. And then they came back saying, well, they're going to cancel our subscription. And then there was another email back to them from our publisher who was quite steadfast in his approach. He said, well, maybe we're not for you. You know, if you really don't like what we're saying and doing and what we believe in, maybe this isn't the platform for you. And, you know, I'd rather gain 3 or 4 readers in the long term who believe in what we're doing than try and appease one disgruntled voice who thinks our inclusivity is a problem.
Who is your queer icon?
Grace Jones. My answer to this question all the time, because I remember people going crazy for Lady Gaga, like, you know, what was it, 15 years ago when she first came out. They're like, oh, look at her dressed in these wacky outfits like club kids. I'm like, Grace did this 40 years ago. You know, when Beyonce wears, you know, a Moogler outfit or just something wild, Grace did it, and she did it in the clubs, and then she did it elsewhere. And then also the language that Grace, for me, it's not just the aesthetic, but it's the language that she used. Because I remember there are TV interviews, and, you know, people who are unfamiliar with how incredible, iconic she is should Google them. But there's a couple of interviews. One, and they're both British interviewers, I think, but they ask her directly, are you a man or woman? She goes, I'm not a man, I'm not a woman. She's like, she was using the language that we use today. Somebody who doesn't necessarily fit into either category, you know, doesn't identify as man or woman, in the 80s, long before it had any kind of words, or before it had a structure to it, it didn't have the meanings for it, but she kind of was just expressing herself so succinctly and so well and eloquently. She snaps a few times and, you know, beats up the interviewer when he's rude to her in one of them. She's never chased popularity. She's, you know, she's turned down a duet with Lady Gaga. And her response to Lady Gaga doing, her response to the question of Lady Gaga doing a duet with her is like, what's in it for me? Like, if Lady Gaga was a duet with Grace, Lady Gaga gets the credit and the credibility. Grace doesn't need that. Grace is timeless and iconic and will live on for decades to come, long after many other pop stars have since been and gone.
Stay with me, this is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net, top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.